this, we're so linked up in this movement to our the civic succession that Krishna is so directly involved in our day-to-day lives. Behind the activities, the struggles in life, the challenges we may face, Krishna's hand is there and he's trying to teach us something. So we have to be open to receiving that. We have to see how that is coming from Krishna. If we see things separate, if we don't make that connection, we don't make that link, then we miss the purpose of that event in our life. And the more and more purified or advanced the devotees become, the more and more they see that at all times, in all places. So this is the next step of seeing that actually karma is given by the Supreme Lord. An example may be given like, okay, this is a kind of stretch, but stay with me. We all used to be in school, and you'd have to go to recess. You didn't have to go, you wanted to go. It was the only reason you wanted to go to school. You get to go to recess. Now, there's some recess teacher. She may be very strict, or she might be nice, or something. But you also have your real teacher. So the recess teacher, she's telling you, okay, you can play here, you can't play there. But the teacher, she's just in her room, but she's looking out the window. She's watching everything, making sure everything. And she sees how you're playing, how you're being treated. If you do something wrong, and Sunday's the recess teacher is going to come and say, you can't do that. At any moment, she's right there. And if she sees something, oh, no, actually, he's okay. He doesn't need to be. He's okay to play there. Then immediately that oversees the intermediate. It's like that. Behind the material nature, the verse of Prakriti, no, in 9:10, Maya Dyakshena Prakriti Suyute Satrashma, the material nature, all the situations that are happening to us, Krishna is conscious of that. He's omniscient. He's all-knowing. So he knows everything that's going on. He's sanctioning it, whether, yeah, that's okay, or no, that's not okay. We recently had a Prabhupada class on a Sunday, and Daita played one lecture. And it was really getting into this point, how we need to understand that Krishna is behind all of these activities of material nature, everything that's going on. So I don't know if this was the same lecture, but I found one in which he's talking about that. Prabhupada says, we use this word omnipotency. We do not know actually what is that omnipotency. Omnipotency means he has got diverse energies. That is omnipotency. And we do not know by which energy he's acting in a particular case. But this is a fact that his energy is working. And he says also in the Bhagavad Gita directly, Maya Dyakshena Prakriti Suyate Sacharacharam. Under my supervision, Prakriti is acting. Is it a bluff? No. Actually, Prakriti is acting under his direction. And then he quotes the Brahma Samhita. Durga is acting under the direction of Govinda. The direction is there. Direction is there actually, but because we cannot conceive how this plan, the direction of the Supreme Lord is there, so that a nice flower is coming with so beautiful feature, but direction is there, we should know. Ordinarily, we say sometimes that not a blade of grass moves without the direction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So everything is going on under the direction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Don't think it is taking automatically. There is no such thing as automatical. The direction is so quick, so sufficient, and so perfect. Immediately. And example of a computer. One who's got the eyes to see, Krishna Kato Dayam. Whatever he sees, he remembers Krishna. And one other example is given here. Just imagine how expert the supervision. The waves of the sea are going on perpetually, but the waves cannot come beyond the limit. We have walked on the sea beach. So just a 10, 1, 3 feet, the big ocean, Pacific Ocean, but we are certain that this Pacific Ocean cannot come beyond this limit. We are certain. Are we certain? Because there is order of Krishna, Maya Dyakshena, because we know that there is God's order. The Pacific Ocean may be very, very big, but still, he cannot disobey the order of the Supreme. This is understanding of Krishna. Krishna consciousness means you have to study everything, how things are going on. And this is stated. You simply have to think. Yes. You have to confirm by your brain. If you have got dull brain, then how you can study? Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Maya Dyakshena Prakriti, Suyute Sacharacharam. The material nature is working under his direction. And you can verify it, how nature is working correctly, exactly. Unless there is some systematic order, how everything is working systematically. So all of the events in the world, it's maybe hard to fathom or realize that, but everything's actually being sanctioned by Krishna. Nothing happens without Krishna's permission and sanction. And so in our own lives also, we shouldn't think anything different. We shouldn't think, oh, this was a mistake. Krishna stepped away from his office and, this calamity came into my life. And so what this does is allows the devotee to take deeper levels of shelter of Krishna, like we see in Chitraketu here. And the point of omnipotency, that Krishna's diverse energies are actually maintaining things. With a devotee, he doesn't distinguish between the energy and the energetic. On a higher platform, everything is Krishna. Everything is Krishna's energy. So he just goes directly to Krishna. He doesn't deal with the intermediaries. So that's one point we may pick up later. But we are supposed to cover a few more texts. So we'll continue hearing Chitraketu's state of mind, text 19. Naivatmana parascapi kartasyat sukadukayo kartaram manyate chagya atmanam paramevacha. In this material world, neither the living entity himself nor others, friends and enemies, are the cause of material happiness and distress. But because of gross ignorance, the living entity thinks that he and others are the cause. Purport: in this verse, Agya is very significant. In the material world, all living entities are Agya, ignorant in different degrees. This ignorance continues very strongly in the mode of ignorance presented by material nature. One must therefore promote himself to the stage of goodness through his character and behavior, and then gradually come to the transcendental platform, or Adhoksaja platform, in which he realizes both his position and the position of others. Everything is done under the superintendence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The process by which the results of action are ordained is called Niyatam, always working. So again, understanding it's not the living entity himself nor others that are the cause of material happiness and distress, but out of ignorance one thinks that. And this ignorance has to be transcended, and when that happens, one realizes both his position and the position of others. In other words, he understands the soul and the body, the difference. That the soul is transcendental. It's the body's the material energy that's causing these different things. So he's not finding one other soul accountable. He sees that the soul is transcendental. It's part and parcel of Krishna. Ultimately, it's the material nature that's giving the reactions, like similar to the first text here. Prakriti kriyamanani guna karmani sarvashah. So, because we're identifying others as their bodies, then we're taking issue with them and their behavior and their activities. That type of ignorance in which we try to hold the jiva accountable for activities of the modes of nature, it causes a it's an offense. That this is why Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita, you have to understand the field and the knower of the field in order to get free from the modes of nature. You get free from the modes of nature by carefully understanding them and hearing about them from a realized soul. So as long as we are still identifying the soul with the body, then when some activity they perform is unsuitable to us, we criticize them or we blame them. But it's not them, it's the modes of nature that are acting upon the soul. So you can imagine how what a situation, as we mentioned earlier, this world would be in if people actually understood that principle, that there would be no action. You can't attack or harm or blame anyone because you're seeing these higher understandings of how Krishna's nature is working. That no one's, it's not actually their responsibility. It's the modes of nature that are acting upon them. Therefore, one would accept that situation. It's not going to be so much counter attack, so much revenge. Rather, one seeing how this is due to my own activities. And one more text. This is text 20. Gunaprabhava etasmin kashapa ko nanugraha kasvargo naraka kova kim sukham dukham evava. This material world resembles the waves of a constantly flowing river. Therefore, what is a curse and what is a favor? What are the heavenly planets and what are the hellish planets? What is actually happiness and what is actually distress? Because the waves flow constantly, none of them has an eternal effect. Purport Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur sings, Miche, Mayaravashe, Yachabheshe, Kacha, Habudubhai. My dear living entities within this material world, why are you being carried away by the waves of the modes of material nature? Jiva Krishna Das, Avishvas, Karle Tara, Dukha Nai. If the living entity tries to understand that he is an eternal servant of Krishna, then there will no longer be misery for him. Krishna wants us to give up all other engagements and surrender unto him. If we do so, where will the cause and effect of this material world be? There is nothing like cause and effect for the surrendered soul. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says in this regard that being put into this material world is like being thrown into a mine of salt. If one falls into a mine of salt, he tastes only salt wherever he goes. Similarly, this material world is full of miseries. The so-called temporary happiness of the world is also misery, but in ignorance we cannot understand this. That is the actual position. When one comes to his senses, when he becomes Krishna conscious, he is no longer concerned with the various conditions of this material world. He is not concerned with happiness or distress, curses or favors, or heavenly or hellish planets. He sees no distinction between them. So this is the reality of the situation. Prabhupada says when one comes to their senses, that the happiness and distress that we're considering or one is considering in material life is simply a hallucination. What is actually happiness? What is distress? It's all based on a misidentification of who we are. You know, in a dream, if something really great happens to you and then something bad's happening, what is the meaning of that? You wake up very shortly after. Assuming in the material world, one's considering, oh, this is a very good thing. Good meaning what? It's pleasing for the senses. It gives us sense gratification. That's a good thing. This great event happened to me. Or something miserable happened. Oh, this went against my sense gratification. But the whole affair is temporary and impermanent. So actually that doesn't have much value. And actually the real things that are good, we have to see the higher sense of good. Good means it's bringing us closer to Krishna. So we can't say that this is good or this is bad unless we see how it brings us closer to Krishna. And sometimes it is the difficult things, the so-called bad things, that bring us closer to Krishna. And so Krishna also mentions this in Bhagavad Gita, Yehi samsparsha jabhoga dukkha yonaya evite. When the senses come in contact with the sense objects, what's the result? Is it happiness? Is it good? No, it's misery. It's suffering. So this is the problem with the material civilization. It's because of the mode of ignorance. It causes you to think something is good when it's actually bad. Something is bad when it's actually good. And it's based on the sense gratification. They're saying, yes, enjoy your senses. That's very good. You'll be very happy. We're saying, no, you have to give up sense gratification. And they're thinking, no, that's very bad. That's very bad for you. So it's extremely problematic. And unless one gets to hear the transcendental knowledge, then they remain under the grips of those misconceptions. Also in the third chapter, text 34, Krishna says, there are principles to regulate attachment and aversion pertaining to the senses and their objects. One should not come under control of such attachment and aversion because they are stumbling blocks on the path of self-realization. So this is a stumbling block that due to our strong conditioning, we're still attached to this concept of good and bad, enjoyment and suffering. So in devotional life, when it's a complete, 180, our consciousness is still meditating on, I need a good situation. I need to be happy. I need to be prosperous. I know I joined the Hare Krishna movement, but I should still be comfortable. I should, think I should still have a nice, peaceful life. So we carry a lot of these material concepts into our devotional service, which becomes, as we heard here, a stumbling block. Whereas for the advanced devotees, they're only concerned, their only good is what's bringing them closer to Krishna. Like we hear in Gaur Lila, Kolavecha Sridhar. From the material point of view, that's a really bad situation. That's really tough. It's really austere. A lot of suffering. Who would want that? It's so intimate that Lord Chaitanya would personally come to him and bargain with him for a few banana leaves like that. So this is the problem we have with the modes of nature, how they're influencing us, even mode of goodness. Mode of goodness, oh, it seems great, but it's a shackle. It's a golden shackle. Wow, nice shackle. But you're bound. You know, I don't know about you, but I sometimes feel that in the temple. I need a nice situation, comfortable, peaceful, orderly. It's a shackle. I'm bound. So therefore the push is to then get out of that, to work more harder, you know, go beyond the comforts that our senses are always desiring and push ourselves or open ourselves up to be pushed by others to get out of that type of consciousness. Like the early devotees in this movement, they would be doing so many just things today that would not go over very well. So many remarkable things. You know, I was just hearing about the devotees in London. When they went, they were just every night going to try to find a new place to sleep, whether it's some hippie house, some subway, like this type of, you know, is that happiness or is that distress? For the devotees, for the transcendent, that's happiness. That's nectar. That's the bliss. Such intimate association with Prabhupada. Or maybe they, or on the other hand, maybe they had found a really great palatial building and they were very comfortably sitting and resting and sitting in couches. That's not happiness. That's suffering. So Chitrakirti Maharaj is just kindly enlightening us onto the consciousness of the devotee who's seeing not the temporary situations but the controller behind them, and in taking shelter of Krishna, being able to transcend the modes of nature, the conceptions and the conditioning that keeps us bound to this samsara chakra, this wheel of samsara. Maybe we'll see if there's a few questions. If not, we can continue. Yes, please. Thank you very much, Prabhu. Hare Krishna.
In the last statement that you made about devotees in London, if I heard you right, you said if they were sitting on couches, that that would be suffering.
In one sense.
How would that be suffering?
If under a conception that having a very comfortable situation is happiness, then going and enjoying the senses is suffering for a devotee. He doesn't want to enjoy sense gratification. He wants to be in unalloyed service. So in the context of going there to enjoy, like a materialist would think that that's happiness, to be on a nice situation, a big bed. For a materialist, they think that's happiness. But a devotee is not interested in that.
So the principle is suffering is when one forgets Krishna, and happiness means when one is remembering Krishna, regardless of the external circumstances. Because it's not necessary that one who sits on a couch is necessarily suffering.
Right.
It's whether one remembers Krishna or not.
Right.
So yeah. That's what you were saying?
That's what I was saying.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you for clarifying the language. Thank you.
I just think it is interesting, especially for persons in like a more renounced position within society. I was just thinking of the example of Sanatana Goswami. Of course, he was a renunciate, but he had that really nice chatter someone had given to him, you know. Mahaprabhu wasn't pleased with that because it was so opulent. Of course, there are other examples of devotees who were able to engage opulence in the Lord's service. Generally, they were in the householder life, you know. But, yeah, Mahaprabhu wasn't pleased with devotees kind of being overly comfortable.
Luxuriant. Even if they are, it is for service, they don't like to experience sense gratification. For the devotees, they don't like to have to gratify their senses more than required. In some situations, may be required for your service, but the sense gratification is like water, and Krishna consciousness is like a fire. So the more, I mean, for one who's not advanced, on the highest platform, yes, one can do all those things, but as we're trying to cultivate, Prabhupada says they go ill together, sense gratification, devotional life. Thank you, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna.
Thank you for your class. When I was with two words, Yesham Sparsha Jabhoga, which you quoted, that when I read the translation of that verse, that whatever happiness you feel, it's a source of misery and it is beginning and end. Mm. It was really shocking for me that something is beginning and something is end. What is that? So we are enjoying, but that is the end. Nothing is permanent. That verse and the second one is this one, Guna Prava Etasmin. When I was reading the translation, it's like waves of constantly flowing river, and they are not permanent. So nothing. What is the last line? It's not a permanent. No. The last line of the translation.
Because the waves flow constantly, none of them has an eternal effect.
Eternal effect. So we are trying to enjoy in something which is not eternal at all. That's gave me an extreme shock.
Like when you see people in the airport, the consciousness is just focused on the temporary. The consideration of this is temporary doesn't even occur to the mind. It's so absorbed in that activity that you tell them, do you know in so many years, you know, people don't even think about death. And people live their whole life, they don't even think about death. They don't even think that they're going to die. What to speak of have karmic reactions or future lives, multiple lives. So a lack of thoughtfulness, you know, this is rampant in Kali Yuga. And because of that, people are doing so many things that ordinarily any sane person would not do. They'd consider what's the reaction. So yeah, this is the consciousness that is lacking in the world. Yeah. Thanks, Guru. Anything else you want to?
To hear your thoughts on this point about we are not pure, but we like the idea of pure devotional service. So we're moving in that direction. And so as we move in that direction, there'll be certain things, as you were explaining, you know, certain attachments to material comforts. These things will have to be sacrificed. I was thinking one thing that may be particularly difficult to sacrifice is our conceptions, especially if we've been around for a couple of years, we've read Prabhupada's books, we think we understand certain conceptions. Could you speak a little bit about, but there might be a need sometimes of even our conceptions to evolve. Just I'm thinking of Ramananda Rai, the pastime where, who was it, who saw him doing some service in the forest to the Devidasis. So there was a need for his conceptions to evolve after witnessing that. And so thankfully for him, Mahaprabhu was there to change his mind. But could you speak a little about that?
That's what develops, that's what Krishna consciousness is changing our conceptions. So the external things will, the purpose of the external things, you know, giving up sense gratification is that it would change our conception. The more you give up sense gratification, the Prabhupada says the more powerful one becomes and the more spiritual strength by which one can develop higher and higher devotional desires for service. So that's a natural sequence. Once the externals start changing, you know, you start waking up early, you start becoming vegetarian. Those things have value because they're changing the consciousness. And the consciousness needs to be brought closer to Krishna to be able to remember Krishna. So it's kind of a natural sequence as you're saying, after time, that should be happening. And also one has to be introspective to see that is happening, that I'm not maintaining misconceptions to maintain material attachments, right? That's an offense against the holy name. So, yeah, to be introspective, to monitor, am I still operating on a lot of the same conceptions I had when I first came? And those misconceptions will come out. We'll have blockages or obstacles in our devotional life. That's an indicator that there's some serious or still some misconceptions there. But the process is the same. You just keep engaging Krishna consciousness, keep hearing. Eventually those misconceptions will become rectified. If one is very sincere and taking up the process, that's a comment. I mean, because you asked for a comment. If it's a more clear question, then I could.
Speaking more of not so much like from when you're a beginner to then you come into Krishna consciousness, I'm speaking more about somebody who has already come and he's changed his external behaviors. You know, he's now here, he's chanting, he's understanding the philosophy, and he develops a certain understanding of how the process moves forward, say for example. And then perhaps some new ideas introduced into his landscape of intelligence. But because he's gotten one understanding from, say, from hearing from, you know, from the books or something like that, he may be unwilling to let go of that conception, but which may he may have to do if he wants to make further advancement. So it's not so much a misconception per se, it's one you know what I'm saying? I wish I could think of a really good example. Is that Marbu? Can you think of a good example?
A good example perhaps is giving up bad association and preaching the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. We could, as soon as a person comes into Krishna consciousness in the first few years, he hears Janasangha, one should give up and all that, and the first victims are our families. Then over time, that same conception starts developing into a further refinement that that's not how I approach them. That's how I understood. So I read something that from Prabhupada's books, some conception. But then I later see that, that family are also parts and parcels of Krishna, and I may have to engage with them differently.
Yes.
How do I engage them in Krishna's service? So that conception starts evolving in a different way. For example, or some other examples. Another would be, just for the sake of some discussion, I hear something and it connects with me. Let's say I pick on book distribution, and there are quotes everywhere that Prabhupada said, this is our main business. Okay. And that conception becomes strong. We carry it like that. And someone else says, let's say we have to do Maha cleanup today. Oh, come on, Prabhu, let me show you all the quotes, whatever, right?
Yeah, that's good.
But then over time, our own Krishna consciousness may help us see things perhaps in a more integrated manner or something.
Yeah.
That we understand, there's either a higher purpose, there's something. Some people may see it that way, may not see it that way, but it evolves. So the principle is, if you can visualize that there are conceptions, different conceptions, and with our daily sadhana, we are hoping that those conceptions go deeper. And another phenomenon is that some of the conceptions, they interact with each other. It's a very dynamic thing. Somehow we compartmentalize the conceptions and we think, that's how it works. That's not how it works. The very fact that it doesn't work that way is, the evidence is that we have to read Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam again and again. And with each reading, you get a different meaning from it, a deeper sense of it. Otherwise, one reading and not a problem. We're done.
Yeah.
Right? It's like reading, let's say, some materialist novel. The plot doesn't change. It's like you can read it 20 times and the plot doesn't change. The story is already, you know. But in Bhagavad Gita, we know the story. But every time we read it, there's always a new revelation. So that's the phenomenon, and we allow it to happen, and we that's called maturing. We're able to handle multiple or even opposing conceptions, and we should know each circumstance, which principle is important. Sometimes we have some philosophical conceptions, and then there are relational conceptions. But this is for the relationship. This is maybe the right thing, but this is a relationship. Let me put into the relationship. Even if I'm right, the other person's wrong, we'll go their way. Fine. But it's the relationship that's more important. However, so things start interacting. These conceptions interact within our realm of understanding and consciousness. And then there's a joy.
Oh, wow.
Okay, I know, but this was more important. Or I went with that idea versus this idea. Then it's joyful, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Versus, you know, Prabhu, I'll show you that verse that says, you know, or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. You went there with
and then we, Shastra becomes Shastra, weapon. Scripture becomes weapon.
It's very nice.
Yeah, like you said, I think if we stick
with reading,
you stick in the association of devotees, then these things will come out.
Yeah.
You know, if we leave, so we think I've got it and I got my conceptions, then there's not that other checking force. You just stay in the fire, and the impurities will get cleared up, burnt up. Okay.
So I think already this topic has been very thoroughly discussed. But if it's all right, I wanted to share like a little. I was thinking of a more technical perspective. Is that interesting?
Yes.
It's okay. So I was just thinking how the foundation of our material conception is our basically it's pride, like the sense I'm the Lord, the controller, and the enjoyer. So then the spiritual conception. We hear it's the original, like it's a reflection. So it makes sense that it would be humility. And also Krishna says, when he lists the godly qualities, it's humility is the foundation of this, like of spiritual knowledge. I mean, aside from unalloyed devotion, but the two go well together. So in terms of being open to receiving a higher conception, we understand it ultimately has to descend from Krishna. So as far as possible, being humble with all, because that will allow Krishna as guru to manifest however he decides to do that. So it seems in terms of developing spiritual conception, humility is really like the foundation of the deciding factor, how swiftly that transformation will take place.
Mm-hmm. Very nice point. Also, I think another thought is sometimes, as you said, we've been around maybe just a short time, and we have this very dangerous, this lethal thought that comes up. I know that. Yeah, I know that. You read something, I already know that. That's actually a very subtle problem, because when that thought happens, then you don't listen at all to that point. Or you hear a verse in Sanskrit, you say, yeah, I know that verse, but you don't actually hear the verse. So Krishna cognitive philosophy is so powerful, it's so potent, that it's so many different levels of our progress. We'll get so many different understandings. So if we're humble and we're open, even the newest devotee, he'll be giving a class, he'll be talking, you'll be like, wow, that was so deep. If we're listening, but otherwise we're hearing, we're like, yeah, that's a really basic point. Okay, you have any Sanskrit? No. I've heard all these things. So on our different classes and things, that can help guard against that also, is the quality of our hearing. The hearing and see how it's relating to me at my stage. What's the message? What can I take home from this? And then any class you can get so much from. You won't be, I need this type of class or that. You can get something from any class or any reading of scripture. There's another thought on that point. Thank you.
Adding to Luke Prabhu, I was hearing from Jai Jagannath Prabhu before 2 days, and he was saying that our impression of the past are so strong, the impressions coming from the past, so we have our own conception of hearing. So then the question comes, when we progress in Krishna consciousness, and we try to be more internalized, we're trying to develop that internal substance, let's say, does that impression fades away, or it remains same, that I know that, I know that, I know that?
That's the purification process. I mean, like we were saying, the more we contact the proper conceptions and the holy name and devotee association, the more we go deeper into those aspects of devotional service, then the misconceptions, they start getting cleared up. It's like the iron in the fire. So we have all the misconceptions. What are you going to do with them? You just stick them in the fire. And they'll get purified if you stay with it. And then devotees, you live in association with devotees, they'll be able to point out or indicate you might have, you know, this behavior, this activity is not in line with the fire. There's some discrepancy here, and that'll point to our misconceptions. So the purification process is there, chanting all these things, doing service, serving the spiritual master, and that's the means by which the misconceptions get relieved. But someone else can comment more deeply on that.
I don't have a deeper comment. I just have something to add to you. Is that okay?
No, only deeper comments.
Okay. Think of it this way, that in that verse which you were quoting yesterday, 434, Pranipat, without Pranipat, existing conceptions will not leave. The word Pranipata means putting ourselves in a lower position than from whom we are hearing. When we are in a lower position, lower means accepting position, because equals and then higher is different. In higher we give. So Pranipat is to submit. And only when we are in Pranipat mode can we receive another conception. Pariprashna lets you hold that new conception. And seva brings it to the heart, so you realize that conception. So without Pranipata, old conceptions don't go. Therefore Krishna uses all these things, which you spoke on it yesterday. So that Pranipata is very, very essential. From whom we are hearing, if are we receiving it in a submissive mode? You see, wherever there's no submission, doesn't matter if that person is even speaking wonderful knowledge. We'll be like first chapter Arjuna. It's always nice to hear about others' lives. Our own life is a little difficult to look at. Arjuna, oh boy, he just could not take it. Until Shishya Steham, and then things move from there on. He quotes Dharma Shastra, he gives wonderful reasons. Is actually not at all taking. And interestingly, his conceptions are, technically speaking, right. He's not seeing anything wrong. But he's not seeing the principal conception of service to Krishna. That's missing.
So, when you get internalized more and more, the conception should change.
our the Cheto Darpada Marjanam is, and sometimes I say, when we come to Krishna consciousness, once in a while we should revisit our conceptions to see if we have moved from those old ideas or not. If we have not, okay, then there is some work to do. Some old conceptions stay. They stay for a very long time. Conceptions for such as, what is the source of happiness? Theoretically we'll say, but when it comes to, as they say in English, when the rubber hits the road, that's when our real conceptions take over as to where is that happiness. So we continue, Cheto Darpana Marajana, layer by layer. What do you mean propensity? Well, if you're in Krishna consciousness, that is part of being in Krishna consciousness, is that I want to change my material conceptions into spiritual conceptions. And I would foster an environment in which the spiritual conceptions can become deeper.
Yeah, thank you very much. I was thinking how, you know, that nice point, that the tendency to give our association to those who are lower, the equals, and even the superiors, then, if we're maintaining that type of subtle consciousness, even we can be hearing from some great soul. But, you know, I have a comment like that. So it's really taking the opposite position, that I can learn from the more juniors, the friends, what to speak of the seniors. Thank you for sharing that point.
And it's blog. That's okay.
Okay, last comment. Back to Luke.
Mercy and seeing everything in terms of Krishna's mercy. This is one of my favorite passages in the Srimad Bhagavatam. And so I wanted to just share from the chapter. It's Lord Brahma's prayers in the third canto. I think it's called Lord Brahma's prayers for creative energy. He's praying to the Lord, you know, expressing this lamentation for the conditioned state of all these living entities who are suffering, and he's praying for empowerment that he can execute the process of creation without falling under the grips of Maya. So the Lord responds to his prayers, O Brahma, O depth of Vedic wisdom, be neither depressed nor anxious about the execution of creation. What you are begging for me has already been granted before. O Brahma, situate yourself in penance and meditation and follow the principles of knowledge to receive my favor. By these actions, you will be able to understand everything from within your heart. O Brahma, when you are absorbed in devotional service in the course of your creative activities, you will see me in you and throughout the universe, and you will see that you yourself, the universe, and the living entities are all in me. You will see me in all living entities as well as all over the universe, just as fire is situated in wood. Only in that state of transcendental vision will you be able to be free from all kinds of illusion. When you are free from the conception of growth and gross and subtle bodies, and when your senses are free from all influences of the modes of material nature, you will realize your pure form in my association. At that time, you will be situated in pure consciousness. Since you have desired to increase the population innumerably and expand your varieties of service, you shall never be deprived in this matter because my causeless mercy upon you will always increase for all time. You are the original Rishi, and because your mind is always fixed on me, even though you will be engaged in generating various progeny, the vicious mode of passion will never encroach upon you. Just three more. Although I am not easily knowable by the conditioned soul, you have known me today because you know that my personality is not constituted of anything material, and specifically not of the five gross and three subtle elements. When you were contemplating whether there was a source to the stem of the lotus of your birth, and you even entered into that stem, you could not trace out anything. But at that time, I manifested my form from within. And this is the verse that I really like. O Brahma, the prayers that you have chanted praising the glories of my transcendental activities, the penances you have undertaken to understand me, and your firm faith in me, all these are to be considered my causeless mercy. Anyway, it's a really sweet section. Thank you for allowing me to read that.
Hare Krishna. Nice way to end. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Shri Prabhupada ki jai.